Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Now we turn to fiction, a new novel about bootleggers, mobsters, prohibition, and baseball players, specifically the greatest player of all time, Babe Ruth, born and raised in Baltimore. The book is The Babe Ruth Deception. It's the third book of fiction by historian David O. Stewart. David Stewart is with me in the studio. Thanks for joining us on the record.
My great pleasure.
You are an historian who's written about James Madison, Aaron Burr, the Constitutional Convention. Why not write a biography of the great Babe Ruth? Why a novel?
I was writing novels at the time, so and they're historical novels, and the publisher was interested in a sequel, so I came on to the idea of Babe Ruth because it's the era my lead characters have been in. So it was sort of a logical progression dictated by outside circumstances. I'm not a baseball historian per se, and that's a big job. So it is more fun to write the novels, though, I have to admit, because so much of history is silence. And when you write fiction, I try to respect what we know about the history, but I get a chance to get behind that and to fill in the characters the way I think they really were, unconstrained, to be honest, by what the records are. I try to stay consistent with what the people were like, but I can write about episodes and thoughts that we don't have records of, and it's a lot of fun.
So when we meet the Babe in your book in 1920, he's been sold by the Boston Red Sox to the New York Yankees for not very much money, even though he's already a great hitter.
Well, it was a lot then, but he was underpriced.
And he is playing himself in the silent film Headin' Home, and we learn that movie deal turns out to be a problem for him. How so?
Yeah, the movie was my angle into the book. I stumbled upon it. It's available on the internet. You can watch the whole movie. It's about an hour long, and it's pretty lousy. but he filmed it during the season. Every morning, he'd rush up to New York, up the Hudson, and film part of the movie. And it was about, of course, a baseball player. And it turned out that the guy, one of the major bankrollers of it, was a gangster who also was the bagman who paid the bribes to the Chicago Black Sox, who had thrown the World Series the year before. That's all true.
That's all historically
accurate. That's historically true. The guy was the number two guy to Arnold Rothstein, who was the gambler who fixed the World Series. So this was a wonderful, for a novelist, this is a wonderful coincidence. It's possible it was only a coincidence, but gee, that's quite a coincidence. And it's a lot of fun when you're writing a fiction to have that as the pretext. Here you've got Babe hanging around with the guy, having business relations with the guy who just fixed the World Series.
But not a World Series that Babe Ruth had played in.
He did not play in that one, although, and the book does deal with this, the World Series the year before when Babe played for the Red Sox may have been fixed. There have been a lot of rumors about that for 100 years now. They still haven't been put to rest, and to be honest, they still haven't been proved either. So it's quite a rabbit hole you can go down when you try to figure this stuff out.
This is your third deception novel, all mysteries investigated by a physician, Dr. Jamie Fraser, who is white, and a black former baseball player, Speed Cook. What should listeners understand about their relationship? It's not really a friendship.
It's not a friendship, although it's a very deep relationship. Ultimately, they are thrown together basically three times. By this book, it's the third one. They really do know each other. But in this era, the first 20 years of the 20th century, it just seemed unrealistic to me that a white man and a black man would be close friends, that there was too much driving them apart. And the characters, as I sketch them, are not, you know, people who are extending their hands across troubled waters. They're people living their lives, and they happen to show up in each other's lives. And they come to deal with each other, and how they do that is interesting to me and has been a lot of the fun in writing the series. But I thought it was just unrealistic to try to portray them as, you know, suddenly, you know, having Christmas together. It just wasn't going to happen.
Although you do bring this story, this tale, into the next generation.
One of the challenges has been that my in the three books, my lead characters have aged 20 years, so...
It's awful, isn't it?
It's tough. There's things they can't do anymore. But it meant that their children become adults and they have interesting lives. And that's been a great liberation and a chance to explore some other themes. So, yes, and the younger generation are different people and their attitudes are a bit different. And I think that's a great thing to have a chance to explore.
That's historian David O. Stewart here on The Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about his third novel, The Babe Ruth Deception. Different attitudes. I want to pick up on that because you are writing about characters of 100 years ago, but you're writing for readers today. And so, for example, the language, the racial epithets, and just casual demeaning references that show up in the dialogue in your book, great on us in the 21st century, or at least they sound odd. But at the same time, the attitudes of many of the characters, including some of the aging characters, seem more 21st century than 20th century to me. Tell me how you sort that out.
There were a lot of things to sort out. The language was an issue for me. They use some harsh terms, ethnic slangs. When I grew up in the 1950s and 1960s, they were in wide use. So I had no question that the world that Babe came from and the names he was called himself, he was widely reputed and rumored to have been of black descent, meant that he would certainly have used those terms. And so I was comfortable that they were right. I do know that they can be hard for modern readers to deal with, and it just seemed sanitizing history to clean them out. Their attitudes, the one attitude that's a bit, could seem anachronistic to me is my African-American protagonist, Speed Cook, is very much a race man. He's very much about righting wrongs, standing up for his race, the way black people are being treated. He's modeled after a real-life character who was an ex-ball player.
Moses Fleetwood Walker.
Correct. Fleet Walker was what he went by.
And the last black player to play in the major leagues.
In the 1880s, that's right. And baseball had, when it was first organized, was pretty ragged. And it was also integrated. They had white and black players. And the white players drove the black players out. Fleet Walker was the last guy to be driven out. And he was angry about it. And he wrote about how angry he was about how black people were treated in this country. Wrote a 70-page pamphlet that is powerful. It came out in about 1910. So there were plenty of black people who understood this. They understood how they were being treated and that it wasn't right. And many were very angry about it. So, you know, that it's easy for whites not to think the race issues were that significant, but they were. They always were.
You write about the Babe playing exhibition games with Negro players. That's historically accurate, right?
Constantly, yeah. He'd show up and play.
Well, was he any kind of force for any kind of bridge?
You know, I think he was to some extent. He wasn't a crusader for racial understanding and friendship, but he was a guy, I genuinely think, even though he used harsh language, he used terms we would recoil from now, I don't think he was a particularly bigoted guy, and he liked to play baseball. He thought African Americans played real well, and he was happy to play against them if he could make a few bucks at it. Indeed, he got suspended from the major leagues for almost 2 months for playing against Negro players. At the end of 1921, the league had a rule that you could not continue to play exhibition games if it looked like it was a World Series team playing. And he put together a bunch of his old teammates from the Yankees and went off and played and basically thumbed his nose at the rule, playing some black teams. And then he got suspended for close to 2 months of the 1922 season. It pretty much ruined his 1922 season because of it. And they finally rescinded the rule because it was such a stupid rule. So he was a guy who just was reasonably close to colorblind, not in the sense that he didn't see it, but he didn't seem to care much about it.
One last area I'd like to get into, and I don't even have a question. I just know you care a lot about the Bayreuth movies. So, movies, go.
You know, they've just fouled Babe in the movies. It's tragic. There have been two movies about him. One with a fellow named William Bendix, who was a fine comic actor, but was not up to portraying Babe Ruth. They made him a punchline, a cartoon character. And then John Goodman, whom I think is a wonderful actor in the correct role, played Babe when he was 100 pounds too heavy and 20 years too old. And they're terrible movies. They're unwatchable. There is, ironically, the Lou Gehrig story, in which Gary Cooper plays Lou Gehrig. Isn't that nice? And the Babe plays himself. And the Babe is actually pretty good playing himself, not surprisingly.
This was made in what year?
Oh, boy, it's in the 40s. He was...
So he was not a young...
He was no longer playing.
Player.
No, no. It's certainly after Gehrig died. So if you want to see the Babe, it's a good place to see him. I also actually encourage people to take a look at that silent movie, Heading Home, because you see him as a 25-year-old guy. We're so used to seeing Babe Ruth in middle age, sort of pot-bellied, tiptoeing across, around the bases.
Which is why they thought they could cast John Goodman in that role.
Exactly. When in fact, the guy was an amazing athlete. He was the best of all time. He was the best pitcher, and then he became the best hitter. I mean, you have to see him as a 25-year-old to appreciate what physical gifts he had, and you don't get it from these other terrible movies.
Given that, given that he was the best player ever, and also was a huge 1920s star. I mean, he was a big personality, a big celebrity. Why haven't the movies risen to meet him?
It's a wonderful question, and someone should contact my agent to find out if we can't make something happen, because he's a cultural giant. His name is the name people know. If you ask people who don't like baseball to name a baseball player, they'll name Babe Ruth. If you ask Europeans about baseball, they'll know Babe Ruth's name. He's the guy. And that we don't have a good depiction of him in movies is really a shame. Because his story, I mean, he comes from nothing. He comes from a terribly deprived and difficult background, terrible family situation. And he makes himself a world figure. And he's often played the buffoon, but you don't become a great athlete and you don't become the kind of cultural figure giant that he was unless there's a pretty good brain in there.
Well, it's a great read that you've
written
about him. Historian David O. Stewart's new novel is The Babe Ruth Deception. Stewart will be speaking about the mystery Monday evening, 6:30, at the Light Street branch of the Pratt Library near Federal Hill. More information at the On the Record page at wypr.org. I'm Sheila Cast. Thanks for listening to On the Record. See you tomorrow.